All right, we had a few technical difficulties up here, so we're going to roll with the punches, and we're going to change the lineup slightly. Very bravely, Peter has agreed to just step in, and he's going to do his talk now instead of doing it in the afternoon, because he's amazing, because he is the one and only Peter Gaston.
Thank you. Thanks very much. It's my job, burden, responsibility to talk about web components today. I'm going to talk about where we are now and where we're going next with them. Just to give you a quick introduction, my name is Peter Gaston. I tweet at Stops at Green and I write at brokenlinks.com. Quick warning for you, I'm not sure what split we have in the crowd, but this is quite a developer-focused talk. There's a few slides of code in here. Hopefully it won't be, if you're a designer and you don't know any code, hopefully this won't be completely over your head. Just in case it is, I've got a little treat for you. There's a picture of an Eames chair for the designers. Just hold that in your heads for 20 minutes. Think about the lovely contours. Web components have been around for quite a while now, surprisingly. I heard about them probably about 5 years ago initially. Didn't understand them at all when I first heard about them. But in terms of actually being able to use them, they're probably about 3 years old since Chromium started dropping them into nightly builds. But we've kind of gone through a little bit of a hype cycle. There's this thing called the hype cycle, which measures new technologies. When at the beginning we hear about them, they suddenly become amazing. We think it's going to be revolutionary. It's going to be fantastic. And then after that, there's implementation details happen, and we end up kind of down here in the trough of disillusionment, or as I like to call it, Bognor Regis. local joke. The good news is, now, this used to be just something that Chrome was kind of doing on their own with a bit of support from Firefox. Now the good news is that all of the major browser vendors are sold in. They've all gone, all right, we've seen what you've done, great idea, love the concepts, so we are going to get involved as well. But that means trouble. When you get four major browser vendors trying to agree on something, that means a lot of trouble. And this is a little bit of what I'm going to talk about in my presentation today. Just a quick catch-up to let you know if you're totally unaware of what web components are. They enable us to create widgets, reusable widgets. This kind of goes to sort of the modularity and the systems of components that Alla was talking about up here earlier. They're going to make it easier for us to work in this atomic way. What it is, essentially, the problem we have at the moment is if I build a widget using existing technologies and I drop it into my page, it could pick up styles from the existing page and turn into something that doesn't look the way we want it to look at a very, very fundamental level. Worse than that, it could pick up behavior we don't want it to pick up because they're not closed, they're not encapsulated. Web components are composable, reusable, and encapsulated. They're kind of independent. They contain all the information about themselves that they need, and they don't interact with a page around them unless you specifically invite that page to interact. So if I take this widget now and put it in, it kind of has this protection around it, and my widget stays looking exactly the same way. You're quite a young crowd, I know, so to put it in terms that you'll probably understand, we run things, things don't run we don't take nothing from nobody. That's kind of what a web component does. Technologies like React and like approaches, methodologies like BEM are ways of doing this using the technologies of today. They're ways of making reusable components that hopefully don't pick up behaviors or styles from other places. But we need a standardized way to do this. And this is part of a more broad thing called the Extensible Web Manifesto, which is about giving developers access to lower-level APIs and letting them build the technologies that they need, or letting us build the technologies that we need. Excuse me one second. Probably the first major win we've had for developers doing this is the picture element, which was created by a community group of developers. We identified a need. We as developers, I wasn't involved in this directly, but we identified a thing we need, which is responsive images, and we went away and we came up with a standard. We presented it back. It was deemed useful and acceptable and is now being implemented in all the major browsers. Web components are made up of four key modules. There's templates, HTML imports, custom elements, and the best name of all, the Shadow DOM. I'm going to do a little run through, a little explanation and a status update of each one at the same time and try and have my cake and eat it. Starting with templates. So templates are a way to make reusable fragments of inert HTML. You can drop a template in your page. When the page is being rendered, the browser will do nothing with it. It ignores it. It treats it like it's not there. But you can use JavaScript to take the contents of that and stamp it all over the place wherever you want. It only becomes active when you choose it to become active. If you use something like mustache or handlebars, you might be familiar with this pattern where you drop all your markup inside a script with this special type, and then you activate it the moment you need it. So template is just a way to standardize this. It just creates a new element called template with everything inside it is inert and reusable. It's implemented everywhere now, apart from Internet Explorer, but I think it might be coming in Edge. So it's a bit of a win. You can use it pretty much today with a fallback for IE. It's not that sexy, it's not that kind of exciting, but it's a nice little thing and we have it and it's useful, so you can use it. HTML imports are potentially much bigger news. HTML imports allow you to take HTML documents and include them in your documents, kind of like the way we can include external CSS or JavaScript files right now. We could do the same with HTML, so we could build a component in HTML, keep it in a separate document, share it with all our peers, and they could just include that document in theirs without having to use any kind of server-side rendering. You do it like this. You just create a new link. You say it's an import, and you link to the file you want, and then you access that with JavaScript to include it in your page. The problem with it is, and it's a major problem, is it blocks rendering. The page will stop rendering when it sees that, go off and do a lookup, pull that thing back in. If you have a lot of those in your page, it's going to be very, very bad for your page performance. So using lots of different HTML imports from different sources is a problem. It also, if these files include references to other files, it's quite probable or common that they'll include references to a lot of the same files, but HTML imports doesn't do a very good job of deduplicating them, so it might, for example, download 5 different copies of the same version of jQuery because they're all coming from slightly different URLs. So Firefox took a look at this, said, no way, we're not going to do that. In JavaScript ES6, which is kind of coming soon, there's a better way to do this coming. JavaScript ES6 modules allow you to export values or functions and then import them from separate files. It's a better way to do it. So Firefox said, let's wait until ES6 comes along. We'll do it that way. So HTML imports, probably not going to happen. There's still scope for it to happen, but will probably be replaced by ES6 instead. Shadow DOM. Shadow DOM, as I said, has the best name of any technology involved in the open web stack, and it allows you to hide complex markup inside an element. So if you take, for example, a select box or a video element, anything that we use at the moment, which when you include it in your page has actually a lot of complexity. The video element is a single element, but inside that has controls for playing, for pausing, for a scrubber to find the time where you want to go to, all this kind of stuff. It has its own API. You don't see any of that. It's all hidden away from you in what's called a shadow DOM. The shadow DOM is a way for you to do that for any element you want. You can create your own brand new element, make it super, super, super complex inside, but not expose any of that complexity to the end user except through an API. It's done very simply by just creating what's called a shadow root inside an element, and then you can put your own markup inside there. Nothing can select that. You can't use query selectors to access that information without specific invitation into it. You can allow or disallow DOM traversal. You can make them open or closed. It's quite cool. But that's about that there, that one function, or that one method, is just about the only thing that every browser vendor agrees on. There's all kinds of things about distributing them, about using CSS selectors from outside, about creating multiple shadow roots. There's no agreement on these whatsoever. So it's also the main problem is that shadow DOM is very, very hard to polyfill. We can't really progress using the shadow DOM until there's a decent polyfill in place, but the polyfill that is there is very, very expensive. It takes a lot of resource to run, especially on iOS. It's very, very, very slow. To the point where the Polymer team have come up with another thing with an even cooler name than shadow DOM, which is called the shady DOM. The shady DOM is like a light shadow DOM. You can read more about it on the Polymer page. It's interesting. The shadow DOM is a great idea. We really need it, but there's still a lot to be defined. The final thing of the four is custom elements. Custom elements allow you to make meaningful markup. So they let you create your own element names to give it a name related to the function, the purpose that it does. Again, this goes back to Alice's talk about kind of naming gives things power. Naming gives things, calls them into being, as it were. So instead of just having a whole page full of divs, you could have elements that are named after the function that they perform, kind of like XML, but not impossible to use. You do it very, very simply by registering a new element with a DOM. You say, hey, DOM, I've got a new element, and it's called fun times. And I call it fun times because that's what they're having right now, right here on this stage. And then you include the fun times element in your page like this. So far, so good. That doesn't really do anything. If your browser recognizes custom elements before you've even done anything, and the reason we have a hyphen in them as well is for kind of future proofing. Basically, the HTML5 working groups have said we will never, ever, ever create an element that has a hyphen in it. So you must never, ever, ever create an element that doesn't have a hyphen in it, and that way we don't accidentally overwrite each other's stuff. If you include a fun times element without a hyphen in it, your browser won't know what it is and will just treat it as an unknown element. If you put a hyphen in it, it'll go, oh, although I don't know yet what that does, at least I recognize it's a custom element. And then when you actually register the element with the DOM, it goes, okay, so this is a fun time element. I know what that does now. But on its own, that's not really special. It's only become special when you add methods and properties to the object. As in this case, where I'm registering a new function called hooray, because we always shout hooray when we're having fun times. And then I can just add that. So later when I look for my element in my document, I can call methods and different properties. So I can create a whole API, an individual API for every new custom element that I want to make if I want to, which is a super, super, super powerful ability for us to have. Again, ES6 offers a slightly better way to do this. Instead of the object.prototype that we saw just a second ago, there's things called classes in ES6 which allow us to extend elements. So again, while we want to have this ability, it's going to go back and change a little bit, and we're going to use ES6 instead. So the approach is sound. There are some details still to finalize. There's one special detail about custom elements, which is the biggest bone of contention so far, probably, and it's this thing called is. And is is a simple attribute on an existing HTML element like this. So I could take a button, and I could say, well, this button is a fun times button. And then it takes on the custom methods, the custom properties, all of the things that I've previously declared, but it also has all of the properties of a button. So it has all of the interaction, it has all of the behavior, everything that's associated with a button, and I get all the new stuff that I've defined. So I can add to the button element by putting a new prototype into it and just extending it with whole new, a bunch of methods and attributes, which makes it super, super, super powerful. The problem is there are limited use cases for it, and there are many technical arguments against it. You could have, for example, what would happen if you had an iframe which is a select box, for example. Apple and Mozilla don't like it. They flat out said, no, we don't like it at all. We don't want to have it. Google say, well, we see there are use cases for having this. We want to have it now, and let's ship it and then repair it later. There are people arguing, like people from the accessibility field, arguing very strongly for having this, but the technical arguments against are very strong also. So at the moment, it's that. So in summary, welcome back to the trough of disillusionment. This is kind of where we are again. So having got this technology and been and thinking, this is great, it gives us all the power we need, but we're probably not that close still to having them. So what we want to do is get through the trough of disillusionment and climb up the slope of enlightenment. That's where we want to get to. But this is just all natural. This seems like, if you've been following the development of web components, it probably feels like, you know, you probably feel like it's a bit fatiguing, there's so much going on, you're nowhere near using them. But this is just a natural consequence of standards being discussed in the open. Basically, what we're having here is a tour of the sausage factory. And as anybody who's had the tour of the sausage factory knows, you don't want to see what goes into those sausages. But it's worth us taking the time to really get this right. It's worth these having these arguments. It's really good to see these things being done because this is a really, really big opportunity for us as developers. This is kind of like when you're 15 years old and your parents trust you to stay at home alone for the very, very first time and not completely ruin the house. We're being given big, big, big responsibilities. Things like accessibility, usability, SEO of custom elements and everything, they've come off the shoulders of the W3C or the WG, and they've come onto our shoulders. It's a big responsibility or a burden, whichever way you want to look at it. And I think we're going to have to get used to the fact that this responsibility is going to be abused. We're going to end up with a lot of crap custom elements. There's a thing called Sturgeon's Revelation, sometimes known as Sturgeon's Law. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of this. It says 90% of everything is crap. 90% of websites out there are crap. 90% of everything is crap. And we're going to end up with a lot of really, really crap web components because we've been given power and some people don't have the ability or the knowledge or the desire to use them in a responsible way. And that's going to happen. What we can do as responsible developers, which I know everybody in this room is, we can follow what's being called the gold standard. The gold standard is something that's being proposed by Alice Boxall and Rob Dodson of Google, and it's a checklist of things that every web component should have. It goes into real detail and says, if you want this to be a really good web component, if we're going to call this a gold standard web component, it must meet a certain amount of prerequisites. It can't be enforced. It won't be enforced. It will have to become what I think I heard Jeremy once refer to as a circle of trust. We, as the responsible developers, will have to promote these best practices, these really, really well-made ones. The gold standard covers things like loading, DOM presence, interaction, styling, performance. There's a long checklist of things that your web component should meet. You'll notice that there's specifically no accessibility called out there. Because if you follow all these things and get them right, accessibility becomes, like, good accessibility of this element becomes a result rather than aim in and of itself. And I think personally that web components, and there's no rule that says you have to do this, I think personally that web components should follow the Unix philosophy, where every component does one job. You make it do one job, and it does that one job really, really, really well. You make one gold standard thing that does one thing. And then if you want to make it more complex, you get another gold standard one that does a complementary function and you put them together. Maybe you create a new element around them and use those two inside your element. You can nest them. Again, it goes back to being called Lego. It goes back to atomic design, modularity. Just make them do one thing really, really, really well. And let's build up a library of new elements that we can have. Usually when we're learning a new technology, we'll say something like JavaScript compared to jQuery. We'll say learn the technology, not the library. Learn the basics first, learn vanilla, and then learn the libraries. In this case, I would probably recommend the opposite. I think if you want to use web components, you should start with a library, something like Polymer. Polymer's not perfect, not by any sense of the word, but it does let you play around with the concepts behind web components in a way that's been fully considered and thought through. So you can start building them, and Polymer comes in kind of various different levels. There's micro Polymer, mini Polymer, and standard Polymer, I think. And the more... So micro is basically bare bones web components with a slight little layer of syntactic sugar on top. Standard becomes like a much more full-featured library. But it's a really, really good way to get involved in thinking about them. Paul Lewis recently wrote a very, very good article on making Polymer performant, because out of the box it's not necessarily performant, but you can work with it and make really good performant websites. Some people are using it already, largely Google. Their Google I.O. website was recently. This is all built using Polymer and web components. And again, there's some really good write-ups, and the source code is available for us to look at. It doesn't necessarily mean you can use or should use web components in your production websites today, but they are, at the moment, in a state that's good enough to be used. Not perfect, but good enough to be used. Good enough to be played around with, good enough to put up small sites. I wouldn't make your business depend on it, but you can use these, and I really, really encourage you to do it because it is going to be the way we build websites in the future. So I said at the beginning, everybody's in, but that means trouble. But I would also suggest to you, don't be downhearted about seeing the state of web components at the moment and seeing these arguments going on, because the important thing in this sentence is not the trouble, but the fact that everybody's in. There is general agreement from all browser vendors, this is the way that things are going to be. And the sooner we get started on a head start on using these things ourselves, I think the happier we're all going to be. Thank you very much for listening to me. I've put up a little reading list of some of the really interesting stuff that fed into my talk, and I'll be available for questions throughout the rest of the day. Thank you very much.